Howdy, howdy, and welcome to Moose Podcast number 434. The basics, again? How you folks been this week? I know some of you have been really cold, and I gotta tell you, I've been really hoping to see photographs from Florida or the Gulf Coast where you got pictures of shorebirds in the snow. What an event. I mean, that was way cool. So I can't wait to see more of the photographs that you folks have taken in this crazy weather world that we are evolving into. Because that'd be really cool, seeing shorebirds on the beach in snow. So that's very cool. So I am still using the Adobe Beta Podcast, and it's got its AI voice cleanup, which means I don't have to go into Audition. It's doing it for me, which is really, really nice. So I didn't hear anybody from this past week saying they heard any difference, so I'm going to take that as a good sign. Now, remember that you can find the podcast and the transcript on the blog post on my website. You can also find it in Spotify and other places. So it's there. And when you go to Spotify, you can leave comments. We can have a conversation. It's not going as much as I would love. So if you have questions, hey, reach out. There's the spot for it. This past week, I did post my Zach Zim Bog Moose Shooting Report. It's a really cool place to go. If you've not checked it out, it's on my YouTube channel, along with, I think there's about 10, 12 shooting reports there now, which are real simple, you know, 5-6 minute shooting reports from where I just was the week prior shooting. This week, I'm just now going into Yellowstone. This will be our first day in the park. So yeah, probably in 2 weeks, I'll have a shooting report for shooting in Yellowstone wintertime. So those are there to help you move your photography forward. Wow. So news events. I tell you, this is really, really cool. It might not have appeared on your stream. You might not be aware of it. Might not mean anything to you, but it means everything to me. So just just a few months back, three, and I'm going to call them kids, with all due respect, because Visual is 22, went out and photographed for the first time the Mount Lyell Shrew. Now, I know you've never heard of the Mount Lyell Shrew. I have. It was one of the species that we targeted back in the 90s. Went up, I was with my mentor, Dr. Williams, and some others. There was 9 of us up there, 10 of us up there for many days trying to find a Mount Lyell Shrew. We found some vagrants and some other guys, but we did not find the Mount Lyell. So I'm probably going to mess up his last name, so apologies, but Vizel Simarenin, who's 22, a graduate of UC Berkeley, was up there and got photographs with his two comrades of the Mount Lyell Shrew. And to me, it's incredibly exciting, not only that they got photographs of that little critter, but there is some young photographers, biologists out there, I'm not going to say doing what I do or did, but they're out there exploring California's vast wild heritage and getting photographs of it and then sharing it. You can find Visual on Instagram. And I've actually reached out to him, and we've started a conversation. Really nice guy. Looking forward to venturing back to California to work with him. So to me, that's incredibly exciting news in this day and age. So appreciate that bright spot. So for a book recommendation, I have one that, well, I've told many people in person about, never really, I blogged about it once, 20 years ago. I just want to bring it to your conscience. It is, especially now that it's 20 years old, one that is an interesting read, because you can go back and you can see the predictions, which seem so almost far-fetched, coming true. The title of the book is The Whale and the Supercomputer. That's right, The Whale and the Supercomputer by Charles Wolfirth. And I had actually talked with Charles way back when the book came out. It full title is The Whale and the Supercomputer on the Northern Front of Climate Change. Now, it's not a book about climate change, but it is a book about climate change. But it's not one with graphs and charts. It's one's talking with Native Americans and looking at the Arctic and the effect that we've had on it up to when the book was published in 2004. But more importantly, predictions. And why I'm bringing it to your attention is when I first brought this book out to people's attention, some of the things that forecasted, people go, that's impossible. And then when you read it, and you now it's been 20 years, you go, oh my gosh, not only was it possible, a lot of it has already occurred. And that's a bit of a scary thing. And it's not a book that's going to scare you, because it has, as far as I'm concerned, ways in which we can start to mend our ways or to help Mother Nature repair her damages that we've caused. So you might just want to check it out, The Whale and the Supercomputer. I got to clean up my handwriting. I want to throw out a big thanks to Bedford, bedfords.com, for again getting gear to me at the last minute. I don't know about you folks, but there's always some little thing that I need when I'm about to go out, in this case, a plate for DGI, and they have it, and boom, I get it the next day, and I get it with confidence, because I know that even though I don't know the part number, and I call it a thingamajig, and the experts there, Bedford's, go, oh, you need blah, 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 and I go, of course I need blah, 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 and the next day, blah, blah, blah shows up, and it is exactly what I needed. That's the experts that are there, and they have these things, the knowledge and these items in stock at killer prices and great service. So I do get the next day, they save my butt, I'm up and working. Because whatever that little plate is, I lost it and I needed it because I couldn't use the DGI without it. So Bedford's, I mean, they've got great prices and inventory and really great, knowledgeable people. And they also have the Moose discount. So give them a call, check out the website, head to one of their many stores, tell them Moose sent you so you get that 5% discount, and thank them for sponsoring the Moose podcast. Boy, I sure do. Thanks, Bedford, for sponsoring this podcast. All right, the basics again? All right, I was at Zach Zimbog, which is one reason why I mentioned the shooting report, and driving around, and one of the main goals is the Great Gray Owl, because it's one of the few places that you can park and get out of the car and shoot great gray owls. And if you do it right, you're not stressing them. I mean, you gotta be a good house guest and slow and quiet, because they're there looking for food. That's why they've come down there, because their normal northern areas haven't got the food, so they come south. That's why boreal owls and snowy owls, they're looking for food, right? So it's life or death. Anyway, back to the point. get out of the car, and there's some places where there isn't much parking. There's even less places to stand with a tripod. So hand-holding. And it was literally, and it doesn't usually work this way. We'd just driven on the bog, and hadn't even been there for a couple hours, and here's our first great gray owl. I mean, it was a killer week. The light had started to come up, and it wasn't really great light. It wasn't horrible light, but the background, the background, not my favorite. So how do you deal with bad backgrounds? Important part of the basics. You move. You move laterally, left or right, or you move absolutely up or down. And I had done that. I was shooting with the handheld, the Z600F4, with the 1.4 engaged, with the Z9 attached. And I was at ISO 1600, wide open. And I'm shooting, and I am not happy with my results. The background is so busy. It's just driving me nuts. And the light in the background was worse. So, okay. No problem. Got some shots. Broke the jinx. Seen the bird. Not going anywhere. It's early morning. We're going into the afternoon, which means he's probably going to get ready to go to his day roost. He's, you know, not going to be actively hunting. And I'm generalizing because all one stupid little vole would have to do is pop out and it's going to eat it. It's not going to pass up the opportunity just because it's nappy time. So I go back to the truck, get my 2X, put on the lens, come back. And at 1200 millimeter, yeah, still not reasonable. I said, okay. I engaged the internal 1.4. So now I'm at 1680. Still on the Z9, still hand-holding, ISO 1600. My shutter speed was 1/400th of a second, plenty of shutter speed. And I'm shooting away, and I'm slowly slipping to the right a little bit, you know, as in I'm literally just wiggling my feet back and forth, kind of doing my modified moonwalk. So not to get attention, even though other people I know are going back and forth, there's always that one panic photographer that just can't hold still. So I get to the point, I'm getting the shots, I'm happy, get some shots, and then the panic photographer scares off the only way to describe it, and the great gray goes back into the forest little ways. Now it's no shot. Well, go back to shooting. Had a great day of shooting, had a great gray owl later that day. Go back to my room that night after a good dinner, look at my pictures, and oh my goodness, they weren't tack sharp. Oh, I'm looking at them, I'm like, oh my, what is wrong? And first thing I go, did I put my fingerprint on the teleconverter? Because I'm shooting with gloves, and gloves really can cause all sorts of malfunctions. Another reason why the basics are so important. And I'm looking, and nope. And it all means one thing. It's me. And they're out of focus because of me. And I kind of pride myself and take a lot of time practicing my hand-holding. But it would appear, because I did a test the next day, that at 1680, I can't hand-hold. Didn't have any problem at 1200. But at 1680, when you got that, I couldn't find it on a web what I was at, but I'm sure it's less than 0.5% viewing area. At that really tight angle of view, I couldn't get a sharp picture. So I said, back to basics again, you know, practicing that hand holding. It's that simple. When things foul up, I know I have to go back to the basics. Another example. You're out there shooting. Again, wintertime, you pull your gear out of your bag. And there's one cause of the possible cause to the problem. But I'm shooting with gloves. More likely, okay, the cause of the problem. Shooting along, all of a sudden you notice that some setting in the camera is wonkers. One of the most common ones is that on the lens barrel, the focusing limit switch has gone from infinity to limited. Oh man, does that mess things up. When things are flying towards you and all of a sudden the lens says, yep, nope, I'm done. And you're like, what the hey? And all of a sudden you realize you look at the lens barrel. If you think about the basics, you see the switch has been hit. Really easy to do with your gloves. Or how about your hand holding and you're focusing and all of a sudden it doesn't want to focus anymore because your glove has stopped and is binding the focusing ring, which tells the camera that that's where you want to focus rather than it's the glove in the way. So the number of examples of when in the wintertime, especially the gloves can mess up your settings, your photography. Think we can do a whole podcast just on that. But the crux of this is you got to have a real firm handle on the basics. We're talking about hand holding. We're talking about using long lens technique. So if you're in the snow, that means that you push that front leg of the tripod in the snow so it's not riding on the surface tension. So you have a good solid platform. You're resting your lens on, hand on that lens barrel and making sure your glove's not hitting the focusing ring. You're rolling your finger on that shutter release. These very basic things, which with gloves become complicated. They can be downright frustrating at times, but it's upon us to make sure we're on top of our game. And how about your settings? It's really easy with gloves to hit the wrong button and turn a command dial. And you're in the heat of battle and you don't realize all of a sudden that you have changed your aperture. You have changed your firing mode from continuous high to single frame. You've changed autofocus priority. I mean, I've done that more than once by accident, hit the I button when I wanted to hit the monitor button to preview an image. And all of a sudden my autofocus has changed from C2 to single spot. I mean, all these things. And you've got to be situationally aware. You've got to look at the information in your viewfinder. If things aren't working correctly, you've got to go back to the basics and figure out what went kafooey typically really quickly. Because, you know, none of this happens when you're just taking a single picture of a rock. Everything works fine when you're shooting just a rock. It's when you have a great gray owl that's going from perch to perch hunting. You got bison coming down the road in the snow or wolves going through a kill that things go kafooey. And then you're like, I ain't got no pictures. And why? The basics. It's no more than the basics. So while you've got this time, you've got, you know, it's still dark at night, but it's getting better. It's not dark as early. Hey, take the camera out. Watch the Super Bowl or the hockey that's coming up or basketball. Have your camera in your lap. Just go through those basics so you have them kind of a muscle memory. So when you're out shooting, you're golden. If anything goes kafooey, you can quickly correct it because, you know, I tell you, it's important, the basics. Again, you folks have a mighty fine week. If I can be of assistance, you know all the ways to find me on social, on the podcasts, and by email. I'm here to help any way I can. You guys take care and make every click your story.